Proverbs chapter 27, and as much as I have time for, and got a little extra time tonight, I think, we're going to kind of go to two different texts and kind of not spend a lot of time on the first and then go to the second and then tie them together a little bit, if that's all right with you. All right, so Proverbs chapter 27, and a passage that is familiar, and again, there may be some, like last time, I think, Brother Josh had the same text that I had the week earlier and did a great job on that, by the way. So that may happen again, but hopefully not. Verse number 5 and 6, verses 5 and 6, and again, I won't spend a lot of time on it, but let's look at it. Notice what it says, open rebuke is better than secret love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Just some practical things that just were standing out to me and for what I needed in my life, and perhaps will help you as well. So let's look at it again. The word open there has the idea to uncover, to uncover. So uncover rebuke. In other words, there's something among a friend, so you're talking about here is among friends, open rebuke is better than secret love. Secret love. So an open rebuke is better than secret love. So evidently, in this relationship, whether it was a spouse with a spouse or a friend with a friend, whatever the relationship, that the significance of a relationship needs to be secondary in a way to the needs at hand when they rise to that level of significance. Now, sometimes people are quick at the draw. You know how it is in the old Western that, boy, they can pull that thing out in a hurry. There's some people that specialize in rebuking. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, they have no trouble whatsoever of letting you know, as they say in Texas in a skinny minute, they have no trouble letting you know where you need to improve. And the whole time they're verbalizing your needs of reproving, of improving, really their need of reproving, being reproved, really is the probably the higher priority. And so in this setting, though, where it said faithful are the or open rebuke is better than secret love. So let's say for a moment that you have someone and you love them so much that you don't want to hurt them. And so instead of just letting them have it, and not in a bad way, but just giving them a brotherly rebuke and saying, that's wrong. You shouldn't, that's that attitude, that action, that ambition is wrong. But instead of that, you just kind of back off of it because you are friends or you are related. And because of that, you kind of back off and, well, I'll just pray for them and I'll just love them anyway. Anyway, I'll just love them. The truth is, when that becomes the mode of operation, when that becomes how you go at it, then really, to say that you have secret love is really not a truthful statement. Secret, yes. But really, if you define love as it deserves, it's not love. Because of your or my absence of the rebuke. And again, rebuke doesn't have to mean you get red in the collar or red in the face and you have to be pointing four fingers or five fingers or how just letting them have down the country, as they say out in the West and in other places, and South Georgia and other places. You just let them. No. A rebuke can be very quiet. A rebuke can be said with sternness of face or with tears in the heart and tears in the eye. But you don't let the outward countenance be the determination of what needs to be done. And so it says here, open rebuke is better. So there's a contrast here. There's only two options available. If there were three options, the word best would be there. But in this particular setting, there's only two options. One is an open rebuke, an uncovered rebuke. You're pulling the lid off of the motives, the attitudes, the ambitions that violate God's will, violate God's work, violates God's word, and violates God's ways. And so when you take the lid off of that, and so the seething underbelly of that, so to speak, is rising up within view, whether it's a quiet voice or one that has to look at them eye to eye and dead rights, as they might say, to say, friend, brother, child, here's what needs to happen. Because if we do that, then we have compromised our, if we don't do that, and we have the blessing of God on that, not because they irritated us, not because they inconvenienced us. Now, that may have happened, may not have happened. I've told you about many years ago, and I never failed to think about it, that a friend, and I'll just give you the abridged version, a friend that was, we were friends. We played racquetball together. We did this together. We did that together. A successful businessman. And long story short, I was a youth pastor. I didn't have a young person in my youth group. But evidently, he had noticed that I didn't keep my word. I'd tell parents, we'll be back at whatever time, and parents would be sitting there in the parking lot, and I know they're young people, and they just have to understand, you know, we just had a good time, or we had a ways to go, or whatever. And he must have noticed a pattern. And so we took the young people snow skiing. How many have heard this already? You've heard it? Okay, two or three. Long story short, took them skiing up to Cataloochee, I believe is where it was. And it could have been beach or wherever, but I think it was Cataloochee. Maybe even Wolf Laurel, I'm not sure. But anyway, took them skiing. On the way home, I was driving the bus. We ran into a whiteout to where I couldn't see Brother Corallo there. Not a bad thing. I'm teasing. All right. But that was terrible. He's sitting right here like he can give it. But anyway, I couldn't see in front of me in the bus that far. And so I just knew, you know, how the roads are up in the mountains. And I just knew this is not going to be good. Well, I decided just to pull over to the side of the road. And about that time, there was a motel. I thought, perfect. So I went in, talked to the owner or the manager. We were able to secure a couple of rooms where the guys could clean up, shower if they wanted. The gals could do the same thing in another room. And they were warm and so forth. What I failed to do was to tell the parents. All they saw in the news was whiteout conditions in the mountains and terrible driving conditions. We were, I forget how late we were, a couple of hours, hour and a half, 2 hours late. It was before cell phones. And so, you know, I just knew the parents trusted me, you know, kind of a thing, and didn't think too much about it. So we got them home, pulled in the parking lot, and sure enough, all the cars are there waiting. And not a single parent said a thing to me. Not a single parent. We had a good-sized youth group, and not a single parent. It was about 2 or 3 weeks later, long story short, Mike Fesserman's his name, called and said, hey, let's go get a bite to eat. Sure, let's do it. Because we played racquetball all the time. It was just a good time to get together at Shoney's. So we got together, and he was kind of quiet. And I thought, this is a little odd. I said, Mike, you know, we're sitting eating our meal. Is there something you wanted to talk about? Yeah. Oh, okay, well, what you got on your mind? Well, let's wait until we're finished eating. I said to myself, self, this may not be good. So we waited, and he said, well, let's go on out and sit in the car. So he came over. His Mercedes is here. My car was right here. We sat in my car, and I'm sitting there behind the steering wheel. Long story short, he told me, he said, Randy, I love you. And he didn't yell at me. He didn't fuss at me. Well, he fussed at me. He didn't yell at me. He didn't get red in the face. He said, if you don't change your ways, he said, you came in, and I forget how late I was, an hour, 2 hours, whatever it was. You came, you didn't bother to call. All these parents saw, and he didn't have a kid in my youth group. The longer he went, I mean, he opened one side, got his razor blade out, you know, got his football cleats out, just stomped all over me. And the further he went, the madder I got. I was like this on my hands on the steering wheel. I was looking straight ahead. Boy, I got... I turned to let him have a piece of my mind. And I watched as this successful businessman, my friend, was weeping, just weeping. He was more worried about my testimony, my walk with the Lord, my influence on those young people, than he was our friendship. He was willing to risk our friendship in order to protect my ministry, the ministry I had with those young people. That's what I'm talking about here. Had he just let it go, and I further developed that habit that would become an instinct, then my ministry would have been short-lived, no doubt. Parents wouldn't be able to trust me. Young people wouldn't be able to trust me as a youth pastor, and the same thing as a pastor. So all that to say this. Notice what he says. Open rebuke is better than secret love. And then you come down to verse number 6, and he says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Just look at the contrast of words there. You have faithful versus deceitful. You have wounds versus kisses. You have friend versus enemy. You have all of those three things. Faithful versus deceitful. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of the enemy are deceitful. So either you're going to be faithful or deceitful. You're either going to have wounds or you're going to have kisses. Either you're going to be a friend or you're going to be an enemy. When you put these two together, open rebuke is better than secret love. Faithful are the wounds. That would be the open rebuke of a friend. But the kisses, that's secret love, of an enemy are deceitful. There's four things involved in that. This speaks to quality of the relationship. What kind of relationships do you have? Spouse with spouse, friend with friend, employer with employee, employee with employer, church member with church member. What kind of relationship do you have? If you and I just allow things to just, the water to go under the bridge, okay, that's water under the bridge. Water under the bridge. No need dealing with it. Yeah, I didn't pay that bill 15 years ago, and I knew it, but he didn't really need it. She didn't really need it. They loaned it to me, but water under the bridge, now it's been so long ago. Not in God's book. Still has a post-it note on that page, if I could put it that way. Unresolved. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, the kisses of an enemy. So it speaks to the quality of the relationship. It speaks to the priority of the setting. If there's a setting that God opens a door for you to have the opportunity, like Mike did for me, owned two businesses. He didn't have to fool with me. I was just a youth pastor, if I could put it that way. But he cared enough. And so it had to do with the priority of the setting. And it was the intended influence. What are you trying to do when you address something? Are you doing it because they really irritate you? Boy, that can happen with parents with their children sometimes. I know it did with me. I had to watch it. Because when they embarrass you out in public at the mall or wherever it is, it's easy to be a disciplinarian and just let them have it or say, all right, there's a righteous way to deal with this. We don't have to put up with that, no. But there's a righteous way to deal with it. Or it may be in another setting of life. What's the intended purpose of the rebuke? Is it so they'll know that you're top dog? Is it so? No, I know that wouldn't be the case of anybody here, I'm sure. But the truth of the matter is we still need to step back and say, wait a minute, what is my motive? Is my motive for their good before God? And so that a setting can be rectified or whatever it is, the intended conclusion or influence and the probable conclusion of those things. And then with that in mind, I'm going to ask you to hop, skip, and jump very quickly. And I got about 5 minutes left. Notice, if you will, beginning in verse number 17. And I'm just going to touch on it, so if somebody else is going to deal with verse 17 and 21, 22, 23, have at it, because I'm just barely going to touch on it. But it fits with the other as well. They're kind of like two wheels on a bicycle, all right? One provides the leadership and the other provides the power, if I could put it that way, all right? Iron sharpeneth iron as a man sharpeneth the countenance of his what? Friend, all right? Now think what's happening with iron bam, iron, iron, bam, iron, iron, bam, iron. Think of the process, and it's in the middle part of that. Iron does what? Okay, all both of you, all right? Let's do it together. Iron what? Sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. So there's a positive reason for getting with someone. Maybe you don't see eye to eye. Okay? And maybe they're all wrong. At least when I'm doing that with someone, I know I'm right. You know, I'm very humble about how right I am, all right? And iron, no, I'm teasing about that. But iron sharpening iron, there's a positive thing going on there, all right? Iron sharpening iron as a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Now look at verse 21. As in water, face answereth to face. So the heart of man to man. So when you go to a still water, it may be a brook, but it's deep. And so the water in that place is still, or maybe a pond. And you go and you look at it. He is saying that when you subject yourself to that, and it's like another man seeing your face, your reflection, and being able to tell what it is according to the context. It says, as water face, as in water, face answereth to face, so the heart of man to man. So here you are, iron sharpeneth iron as a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Okay? So they're knowing each other. Boom, boom. Something positive going on. And then, by the way, if I could pause for a moment, that's why we have Saturday morning, we have men. We've kind of altered the name of the, it used to just be men's prayer breakfast. But now it is men for missions and prayer. And the men will tell you who normally come, there's been a strong emphasis on missions and being a participant in missions, whether it's prayer and they're assigned to different ones or planning for a missionary trip or whatever it is, and then going to prayer about our prayer requests as well as missions. And that's what we're dealing with here. Notice what he says in verse number 21, or 19, yeah, 21. Well, as verse 19 again, as in water face to face, so the heart of man to man. So we ought to know each other. I ought to know Brother Jesse. I ought to know my brother here. I ought to know my brother there. You ought to know this preacher. You ought to know that guy back there and that guy back there and the others who are downstairs or wherever they are working with the young people tonight. In the nursery and so forth, back in the sound room. We ought to be so close as men that I know Brother Dean's heart. I know Brother Jesse's heart or Jason's, so I try to think of Brother Jason's heart. And we ought to be that close, not because we want to be bowling partners, or which wouldn't be wrong, or in the same line of work of construction or engineering or whatever it is, or retired. Those things are fine. But what we're talking about here is the maturing process of man with man and iron sharpening iron and faithful are the wounds of a friend and secret love. Oh, my goodness, no. Open rebuke, gentle or abrupt or whatever needs to be. Let's go on very quickly. Okay, now you'll notice the contrast there in verse 17. I'm sorry, in verse number 21. As the fining pot for silver. What's that for? Think of it. And the furnace for gold. What's all that about? So is a man to his praise. Verse 22. Though thou shouldest... Oh, never mind. We'll skip that verse. All right? Though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar... Among wheat with a pistol, not a 38 or a 9mm, but a different kind of pistol. We'll talk about it here in a second. Yet will not his foolishness depart from him. Verse 23, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. Okay, now let's see if I can put the package together. Remembering secret love, open rebuke, iron sharpening iron. As a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. We're talking about relationships, not just men with men, but ladies with ladies, Christian with Christian, family with family. That we're talking about that process of, well, what is the silver? What's the fining pot for the silver? That is to allow the impurities to come to the top. What's it talking about, a fool? It says you can take the word bray, I know what it means. I know that. I get that regularly, all right? But to bray something, if you look it up, it means to grind into a small powder. The apothecary would take, as a matter of fact, if you see the mortar there, is it mortar in there? Da-da-da-da-da. It is in there. The mortar has the idea of a crucible. So it's the idea like an apothecary, a pharmacist, would take the various pills or whatever it was, and maybe the raw product, and take the pestle and grind it into a small powder so that it becomes useful. And what he is saying about a fool, I don't know if you've ever been foolish, but I have. But he is saying when you have someone who is rejecting the process of iron sharpening iron, who rejects the open rebuke, the lid's taken off, and a brother says, I love you, friend, but here's where you need to think about what you're doing, your ways, your words, your will. It's in violation of biblical principle, and I love you. Or if you don't get that right, be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, you know the rest of it. Oh, but he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap what? Corruption. If you sow the spirit of the spirit reap life everlasting. Literally, into the age, the eternal age. So here's the point. He says, a fool, even though you grind him with a pestle, you grind him and you're trying to get him to realize what you're doing is wrong and it's going to come back and it's not going to be good. Even though you do that, he's rejecting the open rebuke. He's rejecting the iron sharpening iron. He's rejecting the place where silver becomes more pure, or the furnace where the gold becomes more pure, because he's latched on to his foolishness and he doesn't want to abandon that because he doesn't have any authority, he thinks. He doesn't have any responsibility, she thinks, whatever it is. So when we look at it, notice verse 23, and it speaks to those in leadership. It speaks to me as a pastor. It speaks to me of a husband. It speaks to me as a dad and a grandpa. But in context of where we are tonight, speaks to me as a pastor. He says, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. Why does he put that in this context? So that when I see someone as a pastor, or when I see someone in a family setting, when I see someone that is given to foolishness, even in the beginning stages of it, then my responsibility as a dad, as a grandpa, as whatever my responsibility is, if I'm an employer, when I see it beginning to become something that is a chosen way, and it becomes somewhat of a habit, like Mike did for me. Risking our friendship, why? Because there was a higher priority, and he did so because of the setting in which the Lord allowed us to be. He did so because of wanting to be an influence on my life. He did so that the conclusion of my life, as far as we know, I've not talked to Mike in, oh my goodness, 30-something years. And yet, I used it as an illustration tonight because it went straight to my heart when I saw his tears and I realized why he was doing what he did. When you have folks that you have the opportunity of coming alongside and you see them beginning to make, maybe grandchildren, you begin to see them making decisions that you know if they continue in those decisions, you can't make them do what's right, especially the older they get, especially when they're adult children. They have to make their own choices. But as we have that consistent voice and loving on them, yes, no doubt about it, but also helping them to understand God's will, God's ways, according to His Word, what a great privilege it is to be used of God in that way. Does that make sense at all? I hope it does. It was deeply significant to my heart as God brought this text to my life, and I hope it was to yours.